You're listening to ESL Podcast's English Cafe, number 310. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 310. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at eslpod.com. Download this episode's learning guide, an 8 to 10 page guide we provide for all of our current episodes that gives you some additional help in improving your English. On this cafe, we're going to continue our series on famous Americans, focusing on Clara Barton, who founded or created the American Red Cross. We're also going to talk about the California Gold Rush here in California in the 19th century. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. We begin this cafe with a continuation of our series on famous Americans. Today we're going to talk about a famous woman, Clara Barton. Clara Barton was an American teacher. More importantly, she was a nurse. She's best known for organizing the largest nonprofit organization in the U.S. called the American Red Cross. By nonprofit, we mean something that is not a business, is not trying to make money. Clarissa Harlow Barton is her full name. She was born in 1821 in the city of Oxford, Massachusetts. Massachusetts is located in the northeastern part of the United States. Barton became interested in nursing and medicine at a very young age. She often took care of animals and then took care of her own brother after he had a bad fall, after he hurt himself by falling. During the Civil War, Barton took care of injured or wounded or hurt soldiers and soon became more involved in getting medical supplies and distributing those supplies to soldiers. Medical supplies are things that are used for a medical purpose and typically, like most supplies, need to be replaced. Things like medicine and bandages, the things you would put on a cut or other things that you would find in a hospital. Often, one of the most challenging parts of war is getting medical supplies to where they are needed. And that's something that Clara Barton became interested in during the Civil War. In 1862, in the middle of the U.S. Civil War, Barton received permission to go to the front lines of the battlefields. The front lines are the places where the men were directly fighting with others, closest to the enemy. The front lines are, therefore, the most violent places in a war, the most dangerous, where soldiers are more likely to be hurt or killed. She comforted injured soldiers, that is, she tried to make them more comfortable. She thus became known as the Angel of the Battlefield. An angel is normally a religious being, a spiritual being that acts sometimes as a messenger from God, at least in Jewish and Christian tradition. Usually you see an angel in human form with wings on the back of its back. Angels help people, or at least that's one's belief. And so they called Clara the angel of the battlefield. They were referring to how much she helped these poor, hurt soldiers. In 1864, still during the Civil War, Barton was put in charge of some of the military hospitals. To be put in charge of means to have responsibility for something, to be the leader, in this case, of something. President Lincoln put her in charge of looking for missing soldiers. Barton did a lot to advance nursing itself as a profession. To advance something means to make progress or become more important, more respected. Previously, nursing was not viewed as something that was very important or required a lot of skills. That was before Clara Barton. Barton helped people realize how much value good nurses can bring to medical care. After the war, Barton began to give lectures or presentations about her experiences. In 1869, she traveled to Geneva, Switzerland, in Europe, where she learned about something called the Red Cross. The Red Cross was and is an international emergency response organization. The Red Cross responds to or helps out in emergencies, dangerous situations such as wars, hurricanes, earthquakes, that sort of thing. The Red Cross helps the victims. Victims are the people who are hurt by these wars or by other natural disasters, such as a tornado, a hurricane, an earthquake, and so forth. At the time, the United States didn't have a branch or part of the Red Cross. Barton worked hard to establish the American Red Cross, and she became its first president in 1881. In her work with the Red Cross, Barton traveled widely, meaning she traveled a lot. She made trips to Istanbul in Turkey, Armenia, Cuba, all in her efforts to help victims and to respond to disasters. She was very passionate about her work, and she continued to serve as president of the American Red Cross until 1904, when she was 83 years old. Barton passed away, or died, in 1912, when she was 90 years old. But the American Red Cross that she founded, or created, continues to be a very strong organization in the United States that provides valuable assistance to many people for both natural and man-made disasters. The Red Cross is famous in the United States also for collecting blood for hospitals so that there is enough blood for those who need it. And in an emergency, oftentimes there is great need for blood as well as other supplies. The Red Cross raises money or gets money by asking people to donate their money and sometimes their time. When I was in high school, junior high school. I was very active as an amateur radio operator. I still am, what we sometimes call ham radio. I'm not active anymore, but I still have my license. Amateur radio allows you to talk to people in other countries. This is before the internet allowed you to do so. And when there's a natural disaster, often there isn't regular communication, phone communication. So the only communication available is by radio, and that is typically provided by volunteer amateur radio operators. I remember very clearly volunteering when there was a natural disaster in Minnesota, a flood in a town called Rochester. And I remember being at the Red Cross office all night on the radio, talking to people who were down in Rochester, communicating messages back and forth to families and so forth. So the Red Cross is a wonderful organization and an important one, not only here in the United States, but across the world. In some countries, it's called the Red Crescent. Since the cross is a symbol associated with Christianity, in some Muslim countries, Islamic countries, it's called the Red Crescent. But it's the same basic organization. Now let's turn to our next topic, which is the California Gold Rush. Normally, rush, R-U-S-H, is used as a verb to mean to hurry. For example, I could say that I had to rush to get to work on time. I had to move quickly, to go fast to get there so that I was not late. But a rush can also refer to many people moving quickly in the same direction, all going toward one thing or one object. That's what the gold rush refers to. It's a period of time when many people came here to California to find gold. The California gold rush lasted from 1848 to about 1855, a period of 7 years or so. It was the most important event in the history of California in the 19th century. In fact, the most important event perhaps in the state's history. The California Gold Rush began on January 24th, 1848, when a man named James W. Marshall found gold in Coloma, California. Coloma is a small town located near the now capital of the state of California, Sacramento, in the northern part of California. Word spread quickly about this discovery. The phrase word spread means that people heard about it because one person told someone else, who told someone else, who told someone else, and so forth. Word spread about gold in California, and soon thousands of people, mostly men, were rushing to California, hurrying to California to find gold, and of course, to become rich. They had to complete very difficult and often dangerous journeys to reach California. This is before, of course, there was a lot of modern transportation, before there was a railroad that went from the east to the west coast of the United States. When people arrived, when the men arrived, of course, they all thought that they would become rich. So even though the journey, the trip was dangerous, they felt it was worth it. President James Polk officially declared or announced the gold rush the following year in 1849. So the people who went to California in search of gold became known as the 49ers. We talked in English Cafe 292 about the 49ers when we discussed the song, Oh My Darling Clementine, which is about a miner, someone who digs into the rock looking for something. A miner 49er, he was called, and his daughter Clementine. In 1852, about 100,000 people had come to California to pan for gold. To pan, P-A-N, for gold means to look for gold. It comes from a way that you look for gold by using a small pan, sort of like a pan you would have a pie in, and you take some earth, some rock and dirt from the bottom of a river, and then move it around in small circles looking for shiny pieces of gold. Over the years, the 49ers found tens of billions of dollars worth of gold. But of course, the wealth wasn't shared equally. Not everyone became rich. The influx of people had a lasting or permanent impact on California. An influx, I-N-F-L-U-X, is an increase in something, or the addition of something. We had this huge increase in people moving to California during the gold rush. It was one of the reasons why California became a state in 1850, in the middle of this California gold rush. The population of San Francisco in Northern California, for example, grew from about 200 people in 1846 to about 36,000 people just 6 years later. Most of the gold was found in Northern California, and that's one of the reasons why San Francisco became the first large city in this state. Los Angeles didn't start to grow until much later. Many of those 36,000 people were looking for gold, but many were just people making money from the people looking for gold. These were businesses that catered to or served the 49ers, hotels, restaurants, and most importantly, saloons. Saloon, S-A-L-O-O-N, is an old word for a bar where you can buy an alcoholic drink. In general, the people who opened businesses made more money from the 49ers than the 49ers made looking for gold. The gold rush had other consequences. It wasn't just economically and politically important. There were also some technological advances because of the gold rush. As the 49ers found all the easy gold, people had to develop new methods to find gold, the gold that was farther below the ground, more difficult to reach. The gold rush also led to advances in the panning of gold, but also in transportation, in railroads, in agriculture, and in some ways in law. These other changes were because of the sudden gold rush in California. The gold rush also created many problems. Many people came looking for gold, but there were also many disagreements, and these often ended in violence. The Native Americans who lived in the areas also fought the 49ers, and many of them were killed. And as happens often with mining, the environmental damage was also great in some parts of the state. California is still known as the Golden State, and that is because of the California Gold Rush. It's part of the state's identity, just as much as Hollywood and the movies are part of California's identity, or nowadays Silicon Valley and technology. The Gold Rush and California being the Golden State is something that all Americans are familiar with. Now, California could use another Gold Rush because the government, the state government, doesn't have any money anymore. But that's another problem. Now let's answer some of your questions. Our first question comes from Kawa, K-A-W-A, in Japan. Kawa's question has to do with the meaning of the words problem, issue, and concern. Problem can be a couple of things. It can mean a reason to make you feel worried, angry, or confused. I have a problem with my girlfriend. She doesn't like my old friends. That's a problem, something that I'm worried about. A problem can also be a question that needs an answer, especially in mathematics. He's working on a word problem. A word problem is a mathematical problem that is presented as a little story in a small paragraph. Issue is a topic that people can talk about or think about. Sometimes it's related to something in school. The professor gave everyone an assignment to write 5 pages about this political issue. Issue can also refer to problems. So issue can be a general term, but it can also refer specifically to a negative situation, a situation that has you worried or confused. So it can have a similar meaning to problem. Concern is something that you are interested in. It could be a person, it could be a situation. Usually it involves you worried about something. I have a concern about my brother. There's some problem. There's some issue. I'm concerned about him, as a verb, means I'm worried about him. So as a noun, concern is a situation that causes you to be worried. Problem is the word we usually use when we are talking about things that go wrong. We have a problem with our website. I have a problem with my boss, and so forth. Problem can seem somewhat negative to people. So sometimes people replace the word problem with words like issue or concern because it seems a little less negative, even though you're really talking about a problem. Problem is, with the exception of the mathematical sense of the word or meaning of the word, problem is always negative. Issue can be negative. It could be neutral. It could be positive. Concern is usually a negative thing as well, like problem. Adilson, A-D-I-L-S-O-N, in Brazil, wants to know the difference between cordless, C-O-R-D-L-E-S-S, and wireless, W-I-R-E-L-E-S-S. Well, the suffix less, the thing that goes at the end of the word that's added on to another word, means without. So when we say cordless, we mean without a cord. A cord is a long wire that connects usually something electronic to a power source. You plug in your computer into the wall. What connects the power plug to your computer is a wire or a cord. Most commonly, however, it's called a cord. So when we say something is cordless, we mean that you don't have to plug it into the wall for it to work. This is usually because it has batteries. So, for example, you might have a vacuum cleaner to clean your carpets, and it might be a small cordless vacuum cleaner. You don't have to plug it into the wall. It has a battery, and you can use it without plugging it in. Wireless means without wires. It's, however, used to talk about communicating electronically, not power, but electronic signals, such as telephone or radio or internet signals. Most companies, many houses, have wireless routers. This is a machine that broadcasts or transmits a signal, an electronic signal, to devices such as your computer or your phone that allow you to connect to the internet. Or if you go to a cafe, at least here in the U.S., many of them have wireless communication, so you can connect to their internet service. It's called Wi-Fi. So wireless is used to refer to radios, telephones, other electronic devices that can communicate without a wire, without having to connect the device to something else with a physical wire. In British English, I should point out, wireless is a term for the radio. Of course, radios are, by definition, wireless. Remember, when radio first started, there was no way of communicating unless you had a wire connecting two points. The telegraph, for example, is a wired form of communication. Radio, using radio waves, radio electronic communication, is a wireless medium, a way of communicating without wires. And so in British English, wireless can refer to what we now call, in American English, a radio. Finally, Miaga, M-I-I-G-A-A, from a mystery country, wants to know how we use the word sister and brother. This is seemingly a simple question, but in fact is an interesting one, because in different cultures, the word brother and sister can refer to people that it would not refer to in English. So let's start then with sister. A sister is a female person, a girl or a woman, born to the same parents as another person. It could be a boy or a girl. A sister can be older or younger. I, for example, have two sisters. They're both older than I am. They have the same mother and father as I have. A brother is the male equivalent, a boy or a man born to the same person, the same parents, rather, as another person. Americans do not tend to put a lot of importance on the order in which you are born in a family compared to other cultures. I say they put less importance, but that doesn't mean they completely ignore whether someone is an older sister or a younger brother. It only means that when you're being introduced to someone or when someone is talking about their family, they don't often refer specifically to whether they are older or younger. I say, this is my brother. I probably won't say, this is my older brother, even though it's obvious that he is my older brother because he looks older than I am. Of course, all of my brothers are older because I am the youngest, the baby of the family. It really depends, though, on the context, on the situation. I should also mention that in American English, your older brother is often called your big brother, and your younger brother or younger sister is called your little sister or little brother. Your big brother is supposed to protect you, to watch over you. And of course, that's where George Orwell got that expression for his famous novel, 1984. Big Brother referred to the government watching everything you do. And now it has become a horrible television series. There's an informal use of the words brother and sister, especially among African American or black speakers of English in the United States. Some African Americans will refer to other African Americans who are not biologically their brother or sister as brother or sister. This has become more popular even outside of the African American community. People will say, thanks, brother, even though they're not African American. The short form of this is bro, B-R-O, for brother. However, I would not recommend using that in speaking English. It's something that's very informal. It could possibly be something that would upset certain people. It's best probably not to use brother and sister in that way if you are speaking English, unless you are very comfortable or really know the ways in which that expression or those expressions are used. If you have a question or comment about something, you can email us, a concern, a problem. Our email address is eslpod@eslpod.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again here on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Fay. Copyright 2011 by the Center for Educational Development.